Excuse me, everyone. This is the operator. I just need to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Consumer Metrics Product Discussion Call on Tuesday, 20th of November. On the call today, we have Cherry Langdon, Steve DelBianco, John Berard, Tobias Muller, Michael Graham, Jonathan Zook, Jonathan Robinson, Carlos Aguirre, Jeff Newman. We also have Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, who will be joining in approximately an hour at 20 UTC. We have no apologies so far. And from ICANN staff, we have Barry Cobb, Julie Headland, Gwen de Saint-Géry, and myself, Julia Charolin. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Yes, thanks a lot, Julia. So this is Jonathan Zook for the transcript, and we're convening this particular meeting to specifically go over some of the concerns that have been raised by once and future registries about these metrics. And want to thank Jeff Newman for coming on and being a part of the meeting. Just so everybody remembers, this process was initiated by the board through a resolution asking that we form advice on ways to measure whether or not the new GTLD program increased consumer choice, competition, and a third thing. Sorry.
Trust,
exactly. Competition, choice, and trust. And so so those, that was the language from the affirmation of commitments. And so the idea was just to come up with some numbers and to begin to measure some things so that as much data as possible was in the hands of the review team when it convened, and they would make specific decisions about which, if any, of those data points were relevant to their review at that time. So ultimately this is meant to result in advice from ALAC, GNSO, CNSO, and the GAC. But this working group has been designed to put together some possible metrics for each of those issues. And in some cases where it seemed possible, we put together some aspirational targets. But again, the final determination about all of this would be in the hands of the review team. Maybe the best place to begin is to let Jeff summarize some of his concerns, and then we can open the discussion from there. Does that make sense, Jeff?
Sure. Sorry, I have a big echo. Is there anyone else hearing that?
Yes, I'm hearing it.
I'm trying to figure mine on handset. See if that, no, that's not working either.
Julie, anything you can do to track it down?
Julia, is there something that the operator can do about the echo? Lori, operator, could you? We seem to have an echo at least on one of the lines.
I'm asking the operator right now.
Ah, thank you so much, Julia.
I think we've had issues with VOIP in the past. I don't know if anyone's on that.
I'm on VOIP. I'm on Skype, so if we think that's the issue, I can call
I'm
back.
I'm also on Skype. It's Jonathan. I'm also on Skype, and I don't normally have a problem. I'm slightly worried I've got something wrong with my audio setup, so I hope it's not me.
How about me? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I can hear it. I don't hear an echo.
All right, I might as well just start. I just saw John's comments. I think you guys addressed a number of my comments with respect to language. And then Steve and I were discussing some of the things, especially with respect to the brand top-level domains. So, Steve, do you think we should just jump into the main crux of my argument, or do you think we should just go in order?
Hey, Jeff, if you had, this is Steve, if you had overall questions about where this process came from, I know Jonathan gave a bit of an explanation, but when you and I were talking last Friday, you brought up this distinction about us measuring things that may or may not be in the guidebook. And I think that might reveal sort of a fundamental disconnect on where we were taking our charter from. So our charter had nothing to do with the guidebook. It had to do with the affirmation of commitments and that board resolution, which were done long before the guidebook was born.
Right.
And so philosophically, are you comfortable that we have a broader sort of a charter than just measuring whether registries adhered to the guidebook? Because we're not interested in measuring the performance of individual registries at all. That isn't what this is about. It's a global look from the top down at the new GTLD expansion program, and that incorporates not only stuff that was in the guidebook, but maybe stuff that wasn't in the guidebook, so that the next round we do could have potentially a different guidebook as a result of what this affirmation team discovers.
Thanks, Steve. You know, you reminded me of a basic start. So there's a bunch of criteria in here that you guys have recommended looking into. Now, one of my concerns is because it's not in the guidebook, you're looking for things that people may or may not do or feel like they have to do. So, for example, you know, you have some criteria in there that says that TLD should, on their main page or on their website, disclose the benefits and restrictions, and you may use another word in there, of their space. My concern is when you look at this stuff after the fact, because it was never required to begin with, you may have a skewed result. In other words, you have added criteria, which may be fine, but I think needs to be talked about, that you believe registries should do and registrars should do, even though that criteria is not in the guidebook itself. So there's nothing wrong with a registry not doing it from the guidebook, from the contract perspective, but in judging the program, you guys will have made a subjective determination that they should have been doing that. And, you know, there are criteria in there that I think just don't necessarily make sense that you're using for trust when it was never required for them in the first place. Should we go through an example?
I think that makes sense.
It makes, Jeff, it's Steve, it makes sense that you express that, but would you agree that the affirmation is judging not just how people followed the guidebook, but whether the guidebook had the right stuff in it?
Right, but that could be a different determination or a different assessment or review, that the guidebook should have had these things in there, that these things should be done even though they're not required. For example, the guidebook at this point doesn't require that applicants if they're a standard application, that they are contractually bound to what they put in the application. You could say in hindsight that was not the best idea or was a good idea and that preserved flexibility. I mean, you can make those assessments after the fact, but to have criteria of consumer choice and trust based on things that you're making it sound like is a requirement, like registries must disclose, or I don't know if you say must, but registries must disclose on their website their benefits and restrictions. It makes it sound like a requirement, and you're going to go back and say, well, they, you know, 50% of them didn't do this, and therefore didn't contribute to consumer trust. Well, one of the reasons 50% may have not done that is because it wasn't required.
Yeah, great point. So this is Steve. If I could answer that, sometimes we have written these metrics with words like should or must. And maybe they should be written as questions, like did the registries disclose somewhere on their website what their registration policies were, so that it's not necessarily judgmental or normative. It's simply a descriptive question about what did happen. That may be a slightly different way of phrasing some of our metrics that would avoid the implication that we're imposing a requirement. We don't have the power or the intention of imposing any requirements whatsoever. So if we can avoid that by the better choice of language, let's try to do that today.
Cheryl here.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thanks, John. Yeah, look, I was I popped my hand up because I wanted to make sure it was really clear that what we're doing is establishing a set of measurables that are taking a snapshot and then a repeat on measurements based on those snapshots. Happy enough to soften the language from the prescriptive, but it doesn't change the fact that these are expectations from a other set of worlds like the telco industry, which we've looked at to say measurements on trust and trust in particular, but also choice, etc., in other contexts do look to these types of information as ways that consumers have indicated they measure trust. So whilst there's no prescriptiveness at all, it would be sage-like wisdom to recognise that these things weren't just dragged out of the air. You know, we had Rosemary's guidance and very, very long and I think very, very deep and meaningful debates on establishing what from the panthea of measures that we could have looked at were able to be at least applicable into the new GTLD space. But I'm happy to soften the language to remove any assumption that there is any type of prescription. But we do need to remember these are just metrics, the absence of which as a data source will hold up the ability of the review team to do its mandated work. And it really, any assumption on what anything means for future guidebooks or future rounds to be drawn from these metrics is absolutely segregated from this work of establishing what they might mean and what types of things we would look at. That said, I'm happy to soften the language. But I'm less happy to see them devalued. Thank you.
Jeff, this is Jonathan again. I guess that I don't want to run completely away from the notion that some of these are normative. We've been asked to try and assess whether or not the program as a whole increased customer trust, and one of the things that we reach consensus might be something that affects consumer trust is whether or not registries did adhere to the promises that they made. I mean, they're not required to do so. Everyone can go off and do something completely different, but I think it's probably going to be worth the review team looking at the back end when evaluating the program, whether or not that was the case. And as you say, they may reach the conclusion that it was the right thing to do to allow them that ultimate flexibility. And, in fact, it is part of the objection of the NCSG that they should be allowed to do whatever they want. But there was definitely a majority view here that if a dot bank says they're only going to allow banks to be a part of their registry and then they allow lots of phishing scams instead, that might have an impact on consumer trust. Separate from whether or not it was required of them in the guidebook initially. This isn't going to be about penalizing any particular registry for doing something.
Should I respond or should I put myself in the queue too? What do you want?
Oh, I guess the queue's gotten kind of long. I guess put yourself in the queue and let me get to John because he's had his hand up for a while.
Okay.
Thanks, Jonathan. This is John Berard, as Cheryl says, for the record. I just wanted to make the point to Jeff that I entered this discussion 2 years ago with the notion that that our discussions were prompted by what was in the guidebook, but we're not limited to it because when one considers the values of competition and trust, it's really about the outcomes. And so I think it was prudent for us to look at what the outcome was going to be of the new GTLDs being launched into the existing domain name space. And so I don't I agree that if we have made, if we have suggested metrics that seem to be black and white, essentially good or bad, that we should recast those, because what we are looking at are, once new GTLDs are launched, there will be that things will happen, and we're just looking at how to pick and choose from among the things that happen to measure whether the program has met what is the hoped-for goal in terms of competition and trust.
Okay, so...
Yeah, Jeff, so, go ahead.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm not talking about softening necessarily the point. But if you look at, for example, 2-1, 2-2, and 2-3, as just like an example, all of those seem to say whether the benefits and restrictions were generally known to consumers, right? 1, 2, and 3. If you created your criteria as, or a question, do consumers generally know the benefits, restrictions of each GTLD? Okay? If that was the question, that would be fine, because you haven't prescribed exactly how you guys, your team, believes is the only way that can be done. Right? If you guys just had one question, 2.1, do consumers understand the benefits and restrictions, or even two parts, are the benefits and restrictions of each GTLD disclosed, and are they generally understood by consumers? Then you get rid of 2.1, 2.2, and 2.3, and you could have different things that may point to whether they're disclosed, like are they on websites or elsewhere, but not as specific as you made each criteria. Does that make any sense? So I'm not softening it. Your point is, do consumers understand the benefits and restrictions? That's your point. That's what you're trying to measure. But
two things. Understand is the second level. The first was, are the restrictions and benefits available to them? Because understandability was really 2.4, but I really take your point about 2.1, 2, and 3. Could be asked in a survey, couldn't they?
They could be asked, absolutely, without imposing a requirement on a registry that's not in the guidebook, that's after the fact. You're going to look at something that doesn't necessarily tell you whether you've gotten your criteria or not. So it's that kind of eye. Again, it's not softening it. It's basically saying, I don't care how the registry did it or whether it was through registrars or not, right? Because I can guarantee you registrars are not necessarily going to disclose benefits and restrictions of each TLD, but that may or may not be important when you look back on it. But here, since you're putting it as an absolute criteria, registrar websites should clearly disclose the benefits and restrictions, you're now setting that criteria up to fail, whether or not that criteria mattered to the ultimate point of, was the stuff disclosed and were they understandable?
Steve, do you want to go ahead?
Jeff, it's Steve Del Bianco, and I did a quick count of all of our 60 metrics, and it turns out only four of them start off with a statement of what somebody should do. The rest are simply statements of things to measure, and they don't, again, we cannot impose requirements, so there was never any intent to do so, but 2.1 through 2.4 are the four places in this entire document where we start off by saying should. Should disclose and should be understandable. So we're not talking about softening. You're right. We're talking about making it consistent that column one of every single metric is should describe what the metric is. Column two talks about where we would get the data from. So if, in fact, we changed 2.1 to suggest that benefits and restrictions, what is the clarity about benefits and restrictions in TLDs? The source could be an audit of registry websites. It could be a survey of registrants and end users. And elsewhere in this document, Jeff, you may learn that we have suggested that ICANN commission biennial surveys of users and registrants with a whole bevy of online questions that they would answer. And it's easy then to add a battery of five or six questions with respect to that to stick in there. But I wouldn't want to do a survey alone. I think it would be beneficial to do a fast audit to see whether the 1,400 websites, to what degree do they disclose their restrictions, either on their home page or some about page. And again, they should be completely flexible as to whether and how they do such a disclosure. We cannot and don't wish to impose a requirement. So having said all that, I don't know for sure if we combine 2.1, 2, and 3. The 2.1 and 2 distinction, Jeff, was done specifically in response to your objections in October, because we saw that there ought to be a clear distinction between a closed brand and a closed keyword, TLD. You know, dot search, very different than a dot news star with respect to the, I guess, the expectation of clarity with respect to the disclosure. We may not need to keep them separate like that. It could be that they could be combined. But when it comes to being normative, the board asked us to stick a column 4 in our advice. The board said, not only give us definitions and metrics for consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition, but also give us 3-year targets. There were no 3-year targets discussed in the affirmation paragraph 9.3, but it was the board's effort to do what a lot of companies do, that if you measure things, it's great to start off with some expectation of how those measurements should go, since that way management works to achieve the targets. So we were all applauding that sort of management focus to ICANN's role, and that's why you see a 3-year target. So my question for you, Jeff, would be that if we could find a way to take the should out of the first 4 items on this page, what would we do in the 3-year target column? There are some items we have no target, but on this one we wrote targets like all or 100% hit rate. What would be an appropriate target for these measurements?
It's a good question. I mean, I'm just thinking about it as you brought it up. I mean, because, again, I don't think that even if a registry website did disclose the benefits and restrictions, that would necessarily prove your criteria, which is that there was choice. Right? So,
may I respond to that?
Sure.
You're right. Choice is the overarching definition. Under the definition, we designed metrics that contribute to deciding whether we have choice. So the notion of disclosure and understandability, we believed, and I think it's pretty inarguable, that disclosure, knowing what the restrictions are and understanding what they are, contributes to my ability as a user to choose whether to trust the content at children's.book. As a registrant in an open TLD, the restrictions allow me to determine whether maybe I want to register there in .book if I'm allowed to. So registrants and users have different information they would rely upon to make the choices that they'll make. And that's why these things contribute to choice, but they don't directly measure choice per se.
Well, yeah, but and then again, when you look at users, though, it's not like when you go to iTunes and you go on there, there's a clear statement on when you open up your application, there's a clear statement that says, here's the benefits of using iTunes over Spotify, over Pandora, over other things. You just know it because you go to the site and you see what it does. Whether it discloses the benefits and restrictions on it, in anything other than the terms and conditions, which nobody reads anyway, whether it does or doesn't measure you as a consumer, the fact that you chose to use that particular application. You chose to use iTunes for a reason, which was not what was disclosed. So, I mean, 1, 2, and 3, and 4, again, may or may not be relevant to your criteria, but I'm not arguing that they shouldn't necessarily be used and looked at after the fact, but I don't think that any one of those on their own or even collectively is necessarily the measurement of what you're trying to get at.
Yeah, this is Steve. We combined the word benefits and restrictions because we're looking at two kinds of consumers, both registrants and users. The word benefits is applicable only to the registrants. So if I'm deciding to put my bookstore in .book and move it out of .biz where I have it today, I needed to know what are the benefits of going there. So it's really a marketing benefit to the registrant. So we have fallen prey to trying to be brief and sticking both registrants and users into the same metric. And I can see why that would have made you believe we were suggesting that the benefits to the user should be disclosed, and we never meant to imply that. And it's a good discussion because it's leading me to think about ways of rephrasing 2.1 through 2.4 to separate registrants from users and to take out the normative statement of should, but while leaving a target in there that's ambitious, by the way. We might leave an ambitious target, but take out should so that it doesn't look like we're creating a requirement where none exists today. Would it be helpful then if we cut this up between users and registrants instead of combining them in single metrics?
Well, I think that should be done in general across the board because I see registrants being such a small subset of consumers and almost and could be irrelevant for a number of TLDs. Obviously, you have the closed brand TLDs there where registrants are pretty much irrelevant. I also think closed keyword TLDs would fit in that category as well, whether people like them or not, and if they're still allowed to exist. If there's a closed keyword TLD that doesn't have registrants, then obviously that criteria should not apply to them. You and I, Steve, have had that discussion, and of course I had that in my initial letter or revisions back to you guys.
And our reaction to that had been to create 2.1 and 2.2. And so I just hope you'll acknowledge we took your initial suggestions very seriously, and that's why we did the work you saw there. But I really don't think we've solved the problem with what we did on October 31st. We've left the word should in four places, and it's nowhere else. We've smushed users and registrants into one row, and we actually do that very rarely. And the third level of question is whether we still want to have metrics that look in a different way at closed keyword, closed brand, and open. Your letter to us actually prompted us to change other things in this document where we only looked at open and we deliberately would have excluded the closed.
Yep.
I don't want to jump into all those right now, but there's benefit to what you prompted us to do because we found several things later in the document that shouldn't apply to the closed. So staying on just the consumer choice metrics, it looks to me like we could solve a lot of this by taking out should and rephrasing them to be non-judgmental descriptions of saying, let's design a metric on the disclosure of benefits to potential registrants. Another one, a metric to discover the disclosure of restrictions for purposes of Internet users that want to visit a website and rely upon visit websites within a TLD and understand what the eligibility criteria may have been to get in. And we could continue to maintain that the source of the data could both be an audit and a survey. Now, sir, what about 2.4, where we went into the understandability? And it's been over a year, Jeff, but I believe 2.4 came from a conversation when Wendy Seltzer was on the call and said that for choice to be worthy, people have to be able to understand what's disclosed. It can't just be legal gobbledygook. And that's where we came up with this notion of plain language. Cheryl, I think you came up with the plain language idea.
Yeah, both Rosemary and I, Cheryl for the transcript record, sorry, it's been so long since I've had to say it, were very solid on that. And I think that was one of those... we kept going back around and not coming up with a better model ones as well.
Now, I mean, 2.4 seems like the right question to ask. I don't know what the target is there.
Can we move the document so we can see the things that Jeff is talking about?
Page 14.
Thanks.
Exactly which section did you want to go to? This is Julie Hedlund.
It's called A Measure of Consumer Choice. It's the beginning of the table on page 14.
Thank you very much. Getting there.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing the chat too, and I understand that you're looking at things in the aggregate. But in the end, people will take this survey if they don't like new TLDs and will use this, whether it's in the aggregate or on an individual basis, to say the program failed. And I just want to make sure that if the program is indeed a failure, that it's failed because of the overall criteria and not because one, two, three, or even four of these things fail, which never measured what you wanted to measure in the first place. People will use this as they see fit, and I'm worried about the future of the program. So if your criteria is transparency and clarity of registry benefits and restrictions so that users and registrars can make meaningful distinctions when choosing TLDs, that's great. That's exactly what you should look at. I'm just not sure that any of these individually or even in the collective get to that criteria.
I mean, do you have a recommendation, Jeff?
Well,
if you look at the chat, I have a recommendation for 2.1 in the chat, if you might want to look at that.
So if there are registrants, you want clear disclosure of the TLD benefits and restrictions, such that registrants can make informed choices. I think that's fine, yes. But again, by definition, that wouldn't apply to any of the closed TLDs or the single registrant TLDs, whether keyword or brand.
Well,
Jeff, if I could reply to that, it may be that in the target column, the target for open TLDs would be all. It might be a way to finesse this issue with the target rather than create a separate metric for open, closed brand, and closed keyword.
But even the closed ones are going to have to disclose that they're closed, right?
Yep. No. Why? Why are they going to have to do that? Sorry, I'm just challenging you. I don't think they do, but...
We never say anything about what anybody has to do, right?
Well,
there's nothing in the guidebook that requires it.
I guess I was misspeaking on my part. I just mean that I think people would benefit from knowing that a closed TLD was in fact closed.
Who would benefit?
Look at 2.2, because we've just confused registrants to users. If by separating registrants and users in 2.1 and 2.2, then Jonathan Zook's point becomes relevant about 2.2, but not about 2.1.
Yeah, I thought we established that we were going to do that. Yeah.
See, again, if it's a closed TLD, I want you to think like a business, like .newstar, okay? .newstar, I'm in charge of the site. I will not have anywhere on my site the benefits of the TLD or the restrictions on eligibility. I just won't. Won't happen. It's irrelevant to my business. Nobody looks at my website, whether it's newstar.com or soon-to-be home.newstar or whatever it is. Nowhere on that site will there be anything about the eligibility to register a name. It just won't.
Jeff, this is Michael, for the record. I just wonder, and one of the difficulties in phrasing this is some of the sites, and we discussed this, some sites will self-evident the benefits and restrictions. Coming to a site that is .newstar and being told, welcome to the home of Newstar, this is what we do, in effect states, one, it's closed, this is Newstar only, and two, the benefits are you have found Newstar. The difficulty is in measuring such things.
Right. That's right. And in fact, what you'll see at home.newstar is the exact thing that you see right now at newstar.biz. It won't be any different.
So that then, in part, what Steve has suggested for 2.1, I don't know if it's disclosure or if it's evident. I don't know, again, how you put that in other than in a survey, which we've provided for in 2.4 for users. Perhaps there should be a separate one for registrants or potential registrants, that whether or not it's disclosed, whether they are aware of, it's sort of like a either-or type of proposition, which my understanding, and I did come to the project late in the game, but my understanding was the direction was to put together measurable, empirically measurable metrics that could be passed along, along with a few hole fillers, shall we say, such as the suggestions with surveys.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it will be evident in a lot of cases, and I see Cheryl's comment on the chat. But Cheryl, one-third of the TLDs are brands, are going to be brand clothes. And they'll look exactly like New Startup is. I mean, they won't look like that, but they'll be just like that in the sense of they're catering to their customers and their potential customers, which have nothing to do with registrants and maybe even nothing to do with consumers in the general sense, but they have everything to do with that company's business or that, you know, let's say NABP is applied for .pharmacy, they're not going to talk about the TLD in and of itself. They're going to talk about what their organization does.
That's okay.
Right? So they're not going to have, the website's not going to disclose the benefits and restrictions of the TLD. It won't happen. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that because I think, like Michael said, it's pretty obvious, or can be pretty obvious to the normal consumer who's behind it, and that's it, who's behind it and the types of things that appear in that TLD.
I put into the chat 2.1 and 2 that included the applicability of the metric, as I'm hearing Jeff say it. I'm not necessarily proposing it, but Jeff, is what you're getting at what I just put in the chat for 2.1 and 2?
So 2.1 seems right. I'm looking at 2.2. Clear disclosure of eligibility restrictions such that internet users can make informed choices.
Steve, it's Michael. Should those begin whether or is there clear disclosure, something along those lines?
That isn't the way we've done any of the other 60 metrics, Michael. In the sense that we didn't start them as questions, right? We often stated the metric. Just take a quick scan of some of the others, and I think you'll see where I'm going.
Well, then the opening would be whether there is. Simply to be clear, what it is that is being measured.
Like on many of them, we start with the word measure, so we would say measure whether there is clear disclosure. So it's possible to start that way, to start with the words measure whether.
Yes, yeah, something along those lines.
But let's not start with things like should and what is to be consistent with the rest of ours. So in repeating it back from what I'm hearing Jeff saying, his 2.2 would not apply to closed brand TLDs. Personally, I agree with that, but on our last 2-hour, 43-minute call, one of our members within ALAC, Evan, felt so strongly about having disclosure, even on brands, somewhere about this, and we didn't come to consensus on that. It was more of a compromise, you know, to get through the call, but we were potentially, if you agreed with what I have put in the chat is 2.1 and 2.2. Let's be fair to Evan, who felt strongly that 2.2 should not be restricted in the way I've proposed here.
Steve,
now, again, Evan sometimes would infer normativeness to these metrics, and we know that we don't have the power to do that. They're simply measures. Sure. And I think that I would encourage Evan to get onto the AOC review team. And if, in fact, the brands don't disclose that they're restricted, he could be one of the voices saying that that's a negative mark against the GTLD expansion. Let's make sure in the next guidebook that everybody has to do such a disclosure. And that would be a completely appropriate discussion to have there. But I'd hate to see us lose momentum and lose consensus on an otherwise pretty damn good document over just whether closed brand TLDs should be measured as to whether there's a disclosure of their restrictions.
I agree with that.
Hear, hear. Oh, dear. Perfect timing.
The way to really solve it, if you're Evan, the way to solve it is to don't put a restriction just on 2.2, simply measure it for all users. And then in the target column, we could say no target. Just measure it. We've done that, Jeff, several places where we don't set a target. We just say measure this for purposes of understanding it. If you do it that way, then Evan is empowered to use the data we've collected to suggest that the new GTLD program is not really contributing to choice as much as it should, because people have no idea when they're choosing to go to .search or .book, they have no idea what they're choosing. And if they go to .newstar, do they really care? I don't know, but that would be his opportunity to do that, and we will have preserved Evan's opportunity to make that point by designing a metric that measures it. So arguing for Evan, I would say that 2.2 wouldn't have any parenthetical at the end, and it wouldn't have any target.
Cheryl here, John. Steve, I agree with you on that. I think that's a good way around it for 2.2. And I keep saying again and again, these are measures, and the ability to look at any change, should any change occur in these measures over time. It's just fodder for the AAC review team to do what they will with.
That's right. Is Mike, Michael, are you in the queue?
Oh, I still had my hand up. Sorry. I was going to take it back down. I was just basically going to go back over, but I think it was just covered, the use of the language embody, which was sort of the, again, the either or.
Okay.
So this is Jeff. So what does it say now? I'm sorry, just I missed that.
I'm repasting it in the chat because it always scrolls up. Give you a second to read that.
Well, for the target on the right, so there's two from parentheticals in 2.1.
Yeah, the second parenthetical, Jeff, is what shows up in column 4, and it's the exact thing we already have in column 4. 4 being the target column, Jeff.
All registries, but again, we're back to all registries should disclose. Whether it's, you said open TLDs.
Sorry, right? It's open TLDs only, so we would, I mean, we shouldn't, it's all registries that are measured, just 100% of the opens. It's opens only for 2.1.
Okay, and then 2.2, clear disclosure of TLD, no target in 4.4, and you're not limiting 2.2 at all.
Exactly. So we give Evan what he asked for, which is a recommendation that the metric measure all TLDs, but we're not implying any sort of normative scope that says that every single one of them, closed brand and closed keyword and open, should all have it on their homepage. Because that, as you say, doesn't make very much sense, but I want to make sure Evan gets the opportunity to assess that if he's on the affirmation review team or he can comment. And we may determine at the affirmation review that next time around we should have such a requirement, and he'd have his way.
Have a clear understanding of TLD eligibility restrictions as opposed to a disclosure. Because, again, I will not disclose. There are no users making choices about my .newstar domain name itself.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, and I use the word disclosure because a year ago, We split the baby this way. We said it's one thing to disclose, it's another thing to say that it was readable and understandable, hence the 2.4 of plain language. And if that is too sophisticated, if that's too splitting hairs here, I could see getting rid of 2.4 and changing the word clear disclosure to understandable, or you know, understanding of. Is that where you're going with that?
I mean, yes, because look, we all know, we have an understanding now that the application's in. We all know that one-third of the applications are closed brand TLDs that will not do this disclosure of TLD eligibility restrictions because it makes no sense because there are no eligibility restrictions that need to be made known. It's like a regular website that a company has. I mean, I think it's incumbent upon us to do that recognition and not just put in here something that we know that a third of TLDs will not comply with because there's no reason for them to.
So the question, Jeff, is still whether or not people are aware that that's the case, that that's a TLD that they can't somehow be a part of. Because, for example, if Facebook, I mean, this is purely hypothetical, but if Facebook had gotten that Facebook, it wouldn't have been clear, right? In fact, it might have been possible that they would have allowed their users to get .Facebook URLs, right? So it's not a given that because I've got a brand that I'm not going to allow anyone to register or use those second-level domains, right?
But again, I see that, but if the application that Facebook uses or whoever gets a new TLD uses has nothing to do with domain names in and of themselves, but has everything to do with some innovative service that they're doing, then who cares? Who cares whether people know that they could or couldn't get a name? In the end, they're using a service. Right? We're so pigeonholed.
The key is just whether or not people understood, because this expansion happened, and it's a question of whether people understood what their choices were, right? And there are going to be brand TLDs that let people register, whether it's partners, franchises. There's going to be lots of opportunities in which this disclosure is going to be important.
And Jonathan, Jeff's point was disclosure is a step towards understanding, and if we really just want to measure understanding or understood, as you just said, I just proposed a new way to phrase it, picking up Michael Graham's suggestion of starting with the word measure and picking up Jeff's suggestion of going straight to understanding instead of a two-part test of disclosure and clarity. And I do want to have Cheryl think about whether we dispense with plain language or move plain language into the target.
And then is the measure of understanding just a survey then? Is that the only way to get to that?
This is Steve. I would prefer that it be a two-part. We rely upon these biennial surveys we've already designed, but since it is trivial for our staff to do an audit of the sites, it's trivial to run through the sites and check the boxes to whether there was any disclosure, they'll have great data to say that some of these open TLDs didn't even disclose it on their info.tld page. They may say that very few of the brands disclosed it, and we may all say, who cares, because it's understood that I can't get a TLD in .Newstar. So I would propose both survey and audit, since the audits are easy.
Yeah, I mean, an audit is fine as long as it doesn't come out where not having the disclosure in brand TLDs is a bad thing, right? That's as long as people understand, or as long as people doing this after the fact are measuring understanding, that's fine. Like, I know now, I have Amazon.com. I can't have that, not because Amazon, anywhere on their website, I just know I can't have Newman.Amazon.com. I just know it.
So Cheryl has weighed in. Jeff, what is your feeling on the latest paste of 2.1 and 2 with the understanding that 2.4 goes away?
Yeah, from my perspective, that's fine. It's a lot better.
Michael's typing. While Michael's typing, Cheryl and all the rest of you on the call, knowing how passionate Evan is, the intent here is the 2.2 retains what Evan had in mind in measuring every TLD with the opportunity to use that as a way to assess whether the TLD program was really did contribute to choice. Does that sound like we can discuss this with Evan after the call if we agreed to go this way?
I think probably that would be all right. The lack of target is not an issue. I believe that is the data set is what's important. And being able to have that data set seems to be covered in the new language for 2.2. I'm happy with the language, this is Cheryl for the record, by the way, the understanding language, measure the understanding language. I'm less comforted by words like plain language disappearing, however, and I guess that tends to come from experiences, even working just in a multilingual world within single language contracts in the telco industry, but remembering that we are also now working in a multi-script world, and what is plain language in Farsi might be very different to what is plain language in Australia. And plain language, we did establish, has some meaning across a number of foreign jurisdictions. But I think I need to think a little bit more on that one. But your question directly to Evan's concerns and 2.2, I think that will probably be okay. But I can also say that once Olivier gets on the call in a little while, he's running an executive committee meeting within the next 24 hours, so we should be able to raise it with Evan fairly promptly as well. Thanks, sir.
I've just pasted a proposal to address your concern in the chat, Cheryl, for 2.2.
Okay, let me look.
And this is Michael for the record. Steve, while you're doing that, I just, in reading both of these over again and again, I'm just wondering if we need to indicate for those whose understanding is being tested.
Yeah, so the word potential registrants for 2.1 and internet users for 2.2, and that phrase is used in the second half of the sentence. Michael, are you suggesting I repeat that phrase?
Yeah, up front. Measuring
potential registrants, understanding of TLD benefits and restrictions such that potential registrants can make informed choices.
Yes.
That makes you feel better. We can do that. Yep.
I think that would be clear. Otherwise, the sample up above is going to be everyone to see if the, you know, registrants or potential registrants. I think if we put that right up front, then we also limit, you know, the universe that's being tested with that particular metric.
Cheryl, did
sorry,
the audit
but I was just,
plain language disclosure work for you?
Yes, plain language. I know it sounds silly to try and die in a ditch over just a couple of words, but you know, they really will help, I think, later on, because we don't want to have sufficiently obfuscated language. It's a bit like putting up the 172-page T&Cs in 0.3 font. Yes, it's there, but...
This is Jeff. If I can, what is the TLD main website?
Yeah, great question. We certainly don't want to imply that every website in a TLD, and I don't even know what .book will have, an info.book.
Well, go to New Start Office.
Help us think that through with a closed brand, or even an open TLD.
But wait,
I'm an end user, and I go to childrens.book.
Everyone go to New Start Office.
Oh, no. You're going to a brand. Let's not do a brand. Do a generic, a closed keyword. I'm only worried about the closed keywords on this one.
Okay, go to www.newstar.us. That's the main U.S. page. Okay, so that's an example of sort of an open TLD with a bunch of restrictions on it.
Yeah, interesting that you picked newstar.us. Is that what you would call your main page, Jeff?
That is our main.us page, yes. Our main.us website, yes.
Interesting that, I mean, is there an info.us?
There's a nick.us that would just point you straight to here, but there's no requirement. So it's the same.
In the case of .us, your main page happens to be newstar.us. And by using the word main page, I guess you're answering your own question. It's the page, the one that describes how the TLD is run.
Yeah, but that's a website in and of itself where you would find the policies. You'd click on a policies page. Now, so, I mean, that's where your restrictions are, I guess, if you were to call restrictions.
And Jeff, you've identified a potential pitfall in what we came up with a long time ago. We knew we had this pitfall in here of not knowing where, in fact, this disclosure would ever occur. It's not at all clear. If Amazon wins .book, will they put up a info.book page? I don't know what that would be. And so we came up with this nomenclature of a main website or a website.
Right. So that's a main one. Like, where we do our marketing programs would be www.about.us, A-B-O-U-T.us. I don't know which one of those are main. We send different consumers to different places. So,
yeah, they're similar. They're very similar. It's funny, they start with the word benefits, about us benefits.
About.us, yeah, benefits.
I know, up at the top it has benefits right there.
Right.
Benefits being something we discussed earlier on the call, that's all.
No, that's right. Is that my main page?
I guess I would ask you, tell me which is your main page, the newstar.us or about.us, and whichever one you would be the one the auditor would simply check the box to say, yep.
Or Steve, this is Michael, if I could impose another question, which is, what would you call that page, Jeff?
Which one? Sorry.
Page on which you're making, you know, these sort of announcements or explanations.
So if it were restrictions and policies, it would be Nick or Newstar.us. If it was the benefits and marketing and why you should get it and some pretty cool stuff, I would say About.us.
I guess what I'm asking is there a general term for this type of page, regardless of its address, that appears on a website? For example, you know, an intellectual property notice page. I think everybody knows you look for either copyright or trademark down at the bottom, and you click on that. So I can call it that. It's not a main page. I'm just wondering if there's a term that we might use rather than main page that would be clearer and would be more inclusive of the different possibilities that are out there that you're pointing out.
Hi, this is Jonathan speaking. Jonathan Robinson. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so the traditional page for that would have, and this is the, I'm seeing a sort of circular irony in this, because the traditional page for a registry to do that kind of thing would be the NIC dot. TLD page, NIC.TLD, and that would, one might expect that there would be the sort of key non-marketing focused description of the registry and its positioning. But actually, I mean, whether or not there is any standard home or base page, I mean, Jeff's just put a really good illustration there of what some creative marketing can do to try and position a TLD as an attractive piece of real estate to consumers, and so ironically, you know, in that being that one of the overarching objectives of the new TLD program is to permit that sort of freedom, we're looking to say, well, we tried to find a restricted space in which consumers could trust that they could find out about that TLD. But it is difficult to pin that down. So that's my short answer is the traditional page would have been nic.something, but whether or not that's even used at all university these days is questionable.
We're debating whether the word main, we definitely wouldn't put things in here like nic or about. That's way too explicit. And ideally, we allow the registry itself to indicate which page is their general information website. So instead of the word main, would the word general information website solve this problem for everyone?
I think it gets closer, and I think, but as you can see, they may not be disclosed on the same page. Benefits and restrictions may be in different places. So in other words, you'd see the benefits on about.us, and it wouldn't be until you're actually in the registration process that you'd see the restrictions.
Okay, so to make it plural, general information pages for plain language disclosure.
Again, I think that's good for open TLDs. I think for brand TLDs, you'll get more like what's on New Startup Biz.
In which case, that would be duly noted as some of the data that comes back on one of the 60 metrics, and it'd be up to the affirmation team to say whether that statistic for the closed ends up mattering. What you'll see we've done on many other metrics is we've asked staff to gather the metrics and categorize them by whether it's a closed or open or closed keyword or closed brand. And the purpose of that is so that when the data is gathered, you don't just simply get a score that says 700 out of 1,400 were understandable. Instead, you get 700 out of 700 open were understandable, 300 out of 400 generic keywords were understandable, and maybe none of the brands were understandable. You with me on that, Jeff? Trying to make sure that we capture the data in a way that it can be analyzed by segment. You'll see it on page 19 under 3.9.
I mean, I understand that it's again what an unrelated group of people will do with that information once collected is that you're relying on them.
Most of those might be all the same people.
What's that?
Might be all the same people. But, I guess the key is just to come up with some measures that that we have so that we're not later on wishing we had them. I mean, I think a lot of these debates are going to happen in the context of the review team about which of these statistics in retrospect are relevant and, in fact, the data they contain. If as you say, none of the brand TLDs disclose any of this information, and that hasn't led to any questions into the compliance office, and it hasn't created any kind of confusion anecdotally, it might be that it will just be simply ruled irrelevant at the time. Or it may be something that becomes a restriction then, in the future. But I don't think it's anything that is going to have an individual impact on the individual registries.
Okay. I mean, I think we've come as far as we can come on this one. I think I still have a question on registrars disclosing.
Can I answer that, Jeff? I really believe that if we measure the understanding of potential registrants, that metric, which is 2.1, would be an understanding that they obtained by both looking at the registrar website. If GoDaddy carries .book and it's open, they'd get part of their understanding there, and they'd get part of their understanding from the general information pages of .book. So I would propose that 2.1 eliminates the need for 2.3, provided that the source of data includes a quick audit of not only the registry, but the registrar website. we acknowledge that there's no way registrars like GoDaddy would paste and repeat all of the restrictions and benefits from every TLD. They'd simply have a link to that. So this way we can capture the fact that a potential registrant makes an informed choice based on information they obtain from a couple of sources, things they obtain from registrars as well as general information pages of the registry itself.
So I agree with taking 2.3 out and measuring understanding. I'm not sure I agree with the notion that registrars may even have a link to the TLD. I don't think they necessarily...
I'm not even caring if they do, right? Do you think that the audit should try to discover whether they did? We're not being normative about it. We're just wondering. Should we assess that?
Right. Do they do it, yes or no, and then it's up to people to say, do we really care? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Jeff, I'll repaste 2.1 and let's look at it in the chat and see what we want to do here. I was looking at Michael Graham's question. I have no idea what to do with that one, but look at 2.1 in the chat.
Steve, Michael, I rely on you on knowing what to do with all of these comments from time to time.
All right, so Jeff Newman, we were just discussing whether we are wanting staff to take a look at a quick audit of the registrar websites to see to the extent to which they contribute to the understanding of a potential registrant. As a practical matter, do the registrars do anything to link me over to the registry, or do I have to go find that on my own before I buy a domain name?
Usually, they don't like to lose control of the customer, so they generally do not link. They generally have in their terms and conditions the restrictions for particular TLDs once you go through the registration process. But they will not necessarily link back to the main page of the TLD.
Jeff, what you're saying, though, is that they may not link back, but they would provide that information themselves?
The restrictions part, not necessarily the benefits, but the restrictions. So if you try to register a .us domain name at GoDaddy, in the terms and conditions, in the 50 pages, there's a section on .us, what you can and can't do.
Jeff, I just went to GoDaddy, a big registrar, and I looked for NetChoice in .biz, because GoDaddy carries .biz. And NetChoice.biz is already taken. Hey, that's news to me. I got to figure out who has that. Since I picked .biz, the first thing GoDaddy does is bring up variations that I might consider in .biz. But there isn't anything on their page that describes .biz's benefits or restrictions. Nothing. And nor is there a link to .biz because they don't want me to leave this page. I think you bring up a really good point.
If you go down to the bottom of the page, sorry, my voice is running out. It does say pricing. You see a pricing chart? If you pick an actual name. Like pick, I randomly picked sdfd.biz and it's available. And then you look at the bottom on the pricing. Sorry, my voice is going here.
Yep, good. SDFD.biz, hit a search. It is available. It's $6. And if I go all the way down under pricing,
you see that? There's
nothing there. This is just the resale price that GoDaddy's offering.
I got a pricing chart that says all the TLDs and.
I know, but there's nothing on there about restrictions, whether I will be eligible for something in biz.
You go to US?
Yeah, there's nothing at all. They don't want me leaving the GoDaddy site.
Right. But if you go to US, for example, it will say private registration is not available for .US domains. But that's not all the restrictions. If you click through, you'd have to take a Nexus and all that other stuff. Yeah, they don't want you leaving the site.
All right, so for the team, since we've had a year and a half, almost 2 years into this project, we have not spent much time on 2.3 before. Again, this arose very early in our work. That's why it's really high on the choice list. It's numbered right at the top. And this was based on making sure that potential registrants have a good understanding, not Internet users. End users would never look at the registrar site. So the question for the group is it sufficient to measure the potential registrants' understanding through a combination of registry website audits and biennial registrant surveys, and simply leave out a specific reference to registrar website disclosures and go right to the thing that we seek, which is understanding. Maybe a thumbs up on that one in the would be
helpful. Yeah, this is Michael. I'll thumbs up on that.
Yeah, I can't do a thumbs up on my chat, so this is Cheryl indicating. Yeah, I'm okay on that one.
Oh, that's pretty close to a quorum there.
Michael gets 2 votes.
And then we've got Cheryl's vote as well. So that's excellent. Are there other examples? We spent a lot of time on this one, but there were other things that bothered you as much, Jeff?
Trying to think of if they all got addressed.
I just noticed the reason for your comment, and yes, it is Chicago.
So what did we do on 2.5 with IDN? I'm a few drafts back on mine. Can we scroll down to 2.IDNs?
That's the new 2.6, and so if we could scroll to the new 2.6, please. Is that it right there? Quantity of TLDs using IDN scripts.
Yeah, so with this one measure, so my question on this one is this measuring top level or second level or both?
It says quantity of TLDs. It does not say quantity of domains. So it's strictly TLDs. So there'll be 1,400. And again, this is not just Gs, but it's all TLDs. Using IDN scripts. So this is an effort to say, and measure the program to say that relative to 2011, when there may have only been about 30 TLDs using IDN scripts, we hope that that number is higher. And we have a goal is that it be an increase in the number.
Right. So you didn't really answer my question.
TLDs only, top level.
So it's the number of IDN top level domains.
Not just IDN. It's IDN or languages other than English. Slightly,
so
it's slightly broader universe.
Okay, so again, it's irrelevant to you under this criteria whether .shop uses an IDN at the second level. It's really only relevant to you as to whether the IDN or non-English version of .shop.
That's right.
That's right.
Okay, I think that should be made more clear because it's not from that. It's fine. I'm not arguing on the criteria. I'm just saying it's not clear. You could take quantity of TLDs using IDN scripts or languages at the top level other than English.
I see your point. I see your point. Yes, you're right. Let's change that to at the top level. Julie, in previous calls, the pen was held by Barry, but I've been keeping track of the edits we've made so far, but if you're already doing it, keep doing it. Let me know. Are you making any edits to the doc while we're talking?
I wasn't, because Barry told me you were going to, Steve.
Okay. I will add at the top level in front of the word at the end. I will add it to the end of the sentence.
Okay, now the next one.
Clarify what I did earlier is the 2.1 and 2.2 are what I pasted into the chat, and we are eliminating 2.3 and 4.
Right.
Okay, so then what about the next one? Quantity of registrar websites offering IDN scripts or languages.
If the IDN TLDs are out there, but the registrars aren't carrying them because they don't have high volume, that would be an indication that we have not necessarily increased the choice available to potential registrants. It's not meant to be normative. We simply want to measure. And the goal was that there be an increase in the number of registrars whose websites themselves have IDN scripts or languages other than English. Because if these people truly do use their own native scripts and languages, how will they understand an English-only or non-IDN website?
Right. So I understand the criteria. So I think it's the quantity of registrars, not really the number of websites they have, but the quantity of registrars offering second-level domains in IDN top levels or something like that, just to clarify. It's not IDN scripts in general. It's IDNs in IDN top-level domains.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you'll get the IDN.ASCII counting in this. And this one's really only open for it's only for the open TLDs.
Well, and again, in this case, we're just looking at trying to look for a net increase.
It wouldn't matter at all, Jeff. A lot of these, we didn't put open and closed restrictions for the reason Jonathan just stated. You want to think about that a second?
This one doesn't have the relative increase. It's just a specific number increase.
That's right.
Okay, I'm not so concerned about that thing.
So if it goes up a little bit, it really doesn't matter that a bunch of them didn't offer it.
Right. But you'll take out the websites, right? It's registrars in general.
Yeah, let me paste. I just pasted it in. Look in the chat.
Yeah, that's right. Well, wait. offer the second level domains in IBM scripts or languages.
Yeah, Jeff, it's not just IBM TLDs.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that might have been confusing. We're not trying to restrict it to just IBM TLDs.
Oh, you're not?
But we're just looking at a net increase in second level.
IBM availability.
I'm sorry?
Well, but then that's different than what you had in the criteria above it, which you said it's specifically quantity of IBM TLDs. Like, I can offer IBM.web. If I offer IBM.web, you say that doesn't meet criteria 2.6, but it will meet 2.7.
That's right.
That's right, because 2.7 only measures the registrars, whereas 2.6 measures TLDs.
That's right.
And agreeably, they're not entirely consistent, because there are these rare instances where people will take an IDN.ASCII, which is a strange and bizarre combination that it can't be of much value, because the users have to change the script they use halfway through a TLD, halfway through a domain name.
Well,
like, there's a million IDNs in COM today for some reason. Do you allow IDNs in Biz or US, Jeff?
In Biz, but not US.
Do you have many of them?
Maybe 100,000 total. No, not even that many, probably.
And as Jonathan said, I mean, we just tried to word this in a way that's relatively simple, because we're getting at the notion of, does a potential registrant have more choice after the expansion than that potential IDN registrant had before the expansion? And since the TLD space is primarily English and ASCII today, the hope is we'll be able to show that the expansion has resulted in an increase in their choices. Their choices are evident both in what the wholesaler, the TLDs, offer, the registries, but they're also evident in what the retailers offer, and that's the registrars.
Yeah, Steve, I'm not arguing the criteria. You just be clear in the second one that it's in any TLD, and in the first one it's only IDN top level.
You're right, at the top. So I put the word at the top level under 2.6.
Right.
Did that. You won't see it on your screen until I process the document edits.
All right, then the next one, I appreciate you guys staying on the phone, walking, let me walk through this. 2.9 now, to scroll down a little bit.
Julia, could you scroll the document down? Thanks.
Oh, sorry about that. Yes. 2.9, is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, the new 2.9, so it's
that's a lot of them.
New 2.9. Okay.
There it is.
There we are.
Why is this? I don't understand this relevance.
Jeff, this actually came from an early conversation with Wendy Seltzer, where she talked about the fact that some registries will base themselves in a privacy-friendly regime, some of the new TLDs, and they may only use registrars that respect the kind of privacy concerns that the NCSG raises frequently. And there may be a diversity. There may be a diversity in choices that a potential registrant can choose, registrar and registry, in a legal regime that is agreeable to them when it comes to things like privacy or takedowns for IP protection purposes. Even end users might feel the same way. They might want to choose TLDs that are subject to legal regimes that require strong whois for fraud prevention. It's really meant to capture choices that registrants and users could make based on the diversity of legal regimes governing the operation of the registry.
Okay. I don't buy it. And the answer will obviously be that there'll be greater number of jurisdictions if you look at the applications. And I don't know if that's the number of choices. I don't know. It's irrelevant to me because the quantity is going to be greater. We already know that.
Yeah, Jeff, and think about this. There will be things that go wrong with this GTLD expansion. Everyone will be a critic. So if there are a few metrics in here that are genuinely evidence of greater choice, however obvious they may be, this is the time to get them into the list.
Okay. So
there are going to be plenty of ways in which this will come up short. People have very high expectations for this expansion, and the critics of ICANN will not miss a chance to say where we have come up short. So it would be great to make sure that we acknowledge ways in which we will probably check the box, even if it is obvious.
Okay. And if you scroll down, so these you've all said open. That makes sense. I'm trying to find where it differs from what I said. 212, or the old 212. So it's probably the new 213. So if you go down one more. Should probably be it.
Which one are you looking at, Jeff?
The top two, the new two.
Okay.
Pages. I thought this one was really only relevant to open TLDs.
When you do open only, you're focusing only on registrants, because Internet users, who's the other half of the definition of consumer, have access to all TLDs, both open and closed.
Yeah, this is measuring the increased geographic diversity of registrants.
I know, but me as an end user, I can visit sites of registrants even in closed TLDs. And therefore, including the open and close will simply result in a greater diversity.
But if all the registrations are owned by the same company, there's no geographic diversity in that TLD at all, and that's fine.
That doesn't hurt the measure.
If one-third of them are, wouldn't that hurt it?
All it says is diversity should be greater than the legacy TLDs has. And adding one to that measure for a Netherlands-based closed brand TLD doesn't hurt you. And over time,
if you're taking a statistical measure, it will.
But there's not a denominator, right?
I mean, how could
you look at what we wrote in the column 3, we said that we looked for an index or statistical measure of diversity. It was Annalise Roget who brought this up at the Dakar meeting, and Cheryl and Rosemary followed up with her diligently to say, what is this statistical measure of diversity? We thought there was some sort of a academic index that could be used. We could never find one.
Right, but Steve, if you
to find yet another sort of weak spot in here, and that we don't really know how the affirmation team is going to be able to do this.
I will tell you right now that in .com there is a registrant in every country in the world. And .com is probably the same thing. So how are we going to increase it any more than that? Unless you look at percentages or other measurements.
we did a percentage, Jeff, what would be the denominator? The total domain names? What would the numerator be? I mean, I'm really at a loss. We actually did spend quite a bit of time. And Cheryl, if you're still with us, what was the answer we got from Annalise?
Yes, I am still with you. I just had to come off mute. Sorry, Cheryl, for the record. We didn't get an answer from Annalise.
This is Michael. Jeff, is your concern that the closed registries would somehow affect this measure? They're not even covered by this because they're presumably, if they're closed, there are no registrants to be counted.
There's one registrant that could have millions of registrations. That's what I'm worried about. So in theory, you could have a .google and 10 million Google names, but because the registrant is listed as Google itself, it skews the whole balance, and actually geographic diversity could look worse than the legacy TLDs if you look at a percentage. Because right now, each TLD can do a breakout of registrants by region, and most of them do that. And even .com does that. They'll tell you what percentage of their approximations about what percentage are in which geographic areas. So they'll do that now. And I'm just worried that you could have the closed TLDs skew those results later on if you do the same thing.
Right. So perhaps this should not exclude the closed, but should provide that in the case of closed registries, only the single registrant would be counted, something along those lines?
Yeah, but statistically, the shortcut to that is to only count the open TLDs as opposed to adding another level of complexity as to how to count them.
Yes, you would only see open TLDs. Just like privacy and proxy, you don't count the closed TLDs.
And could I get a clarification? When we're talking closed, we are not including within that restricted TLDs.
The definition page we added makes it very clear that these are single registrant. If you're closed, you're a single registrant, and you are one of two flavors. You're a single registrant where the TLD is your trademark. We call those brand. And the other single registrant are known as closed keyword.
Okay, Michael again. If there was a reason why we wanted to include the closed registries in this measure, my suggestion would be the approach that we took with the two-point whatevers, which was to create a separate category then for the closed as opposed to all of the others.
To answer your question, I don't recall that there was an explicit effort to count the closed, but when we made our pass-through here on our last call, this wasn't one of the metrics that looked as if it would be skewed badly by inclusion of closed, and therefore we left it alone. That is still the case if you're simply measuring the number of countries touched. Inclusion of closed wouldn't matter. But there's a good chance that the affirmation team has somebody smarter than we are, and they figure out a measure of diversity, which is a density of diversity or a percentage of diversity. If they cross that bridge to some sort of a percentage where there's a denominator, then Jeff's point is well taken. At that point, the closed could make the new GTLD program look as if it didn't fulfill this metric, when in fact it did increase diversity. So I'm of a mind that we add the word open to the second line, across all new open GTLDs, rather than have it be all and then find a way to back it out in the second half of the sentence, Michael.
And you've already got, for single registrant TLDs, I mean, the criteria we just reviewed was the different legal jurisdictions. You're already looking at that, kind of.
Michael, what's your thought on that, then?
The only thing I can think is I wanted to go back to our definition of open. Where is that? For closed registry.
Page 9?
Nine.
Page 9?
Okay. Give me a moment then.
While you're looking, Michael, the rest of the folks, I pasted into 2.13 what the revised would look like if you guys were so inclined. And the only difference is the word open.
And this is Julie Headland. I moved the Adobe Connect room to page 9, which shows the definition for open GTLD.
Okay, thank you. I've got a hard copy here as well as I was looking at. Steve, yeah, I'd go along with that suggestion with including open. Or you're including close in there? I have to go back to the other. The restriction that you were proposing to put in there, I'd go with that. I just wanted to make sure that we were covering all the others.
And the way that works is the inclusion of the word open after the word new. So it only counts those. And this is a belts and suspenders, a little bit of an insurance policy that in case the measure of diversity is a relative measure, that it not be skewed by what will look like an apparently low diversity among, well, hundreds of thousands of registrations that really belong to one company.
I'm fine. I just looked at your 213 text. I'm fine with that.
Oh, cool. Jeff Newman, back to you.
Yeah, I think I only have two more. So if we go to 2.16, website traffic. Can you just give me an indication of what website traffic you're looking at?
Jeff, a little bit of background. This came from the U.S. government, who filed extensive comments on our draft advice. Coming from a more traditional view of competition, and the competition section has a very similar metric on with respect to traffic. They wanted us to measure this notion that there was a lot more, that the new TLDs, if they did increase choice and competition, that would show up in having more traffic there.
Sorry, so traffic to domains ending in that TLD extension.
That's right. And the last thing we wanted to say is that the new TLDs would somehow overcome. So all we asked for was that whether staff could design either a survey, sampling, like a DNS scrubber, like Alexa, and be able to show growth rates. If you look at the target in column 4, all we asked them to do was to assess the growth rate in the new GTLDs. And they start from a rather low denominator. And so 3 years out, we think the growth rate in the legacy should exceed the growth rate in that same year in the 20 legacy GTLDs.
So there's an assumption here that it's a zero-sum game.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
The way it sounds, that the growth
put it
rate
this way. If I decide to get netchoice.ngo or netchoice.web in addition to my netchoice.org, I don't have a lot to say about where the traffic goes, but it is kind of either or. If my visitors end up going to my netchoice.web, well, that's one time they didn't go to netchoice.org. They may start to choose that. That's why it's
in the
choice map.
And this is just a case of the government's not knowing what they don't know. But most website traffic has nothing to do with users going in and typing in a particular address.
And I know, but they're selecting it from a search results page, Jeff. By the same token, if I look at a search results page, I see the URL and I may make my decision on which to go to based on what the URL is as well.
Right, and your URL can get there because you've paid more money to be included.
No, 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 not the paid search. I'm talking about the organic search. If I bring up the word Neustar in organic search, I'm sure it's going to show me Neustar.us, Neustar.com, and Neustar.biz. And I'll pick one. I'll pick one based on my my understanding of where it's placed in the list and maybe my implicit understanding of what it conveys to be in .biz, .us, or .com. When I'm doing a search for a bank, I may well go for the .bank instead of the Wachovia.com out of an understanding that there's a higher reliability. So people will make...
Let me give you one thing to change. You don't necessarily mean website traffic. You mean traffic in general, whether that's DNS, website, whether that's mail, whether that's any kind of query that would take place. You don't mean websites.
Good point, but explain that to us. What is the difference?
So if you are only tracking traffic to and from resolvers, that is a small subset of traffic that goes around the Internet. There is a lot of traffic that's DNS traffic from which not be websites. In a lot of cases, it's not. But it's mail. It's other protocol traffic. It's a whole bunch of other things. In fact, usually it's indistinguishable unless you check only the web resolvers.
Joe, the second sentence uses the word user traffic. Does the word user traffic make more sense? Or the word end user traffic?
It makes more sense, but it still doesn't make sense as an indicator.
Because, Jeff, I mean, Jeff, there's certainly a lot of traffic that goes over the DNS that's not user traffic, but because we're only looking at consumer choice, trust, and competition, I think that's why we're restricting to consumer traffic as opposed to what might otherwise be considered B2B traffic or some other things that might go across the form of soap services or something like that.
But I would think that most companies can't distinguish between the two.
Yeah, but so Jeff, this is Steve. We are happy to go with the right words because we've been ambiguous. The first sentence says website traffic, and the second sentence says user traffic. And now I have to tell you that we added this after the public comment period using the words that came from the public commenter, which in this case was the U.S. government. So help us to fix this rather than eliminate it, if you know what I mean, and fix it in a way that it's somewhat meaningful in what you may say is a meaningless metric. Help us be explicit about it. Is Internet or is the word end-user traffic better than website traffic?
So what you're trying to do is show that DNS activity, it grows from day one to 3 years out. Right, you're not trying to show that it grows relative to percentage in legacy. In other words,
well, 3 years out, the annual growth rate in the third year out, let's say in the new GTLD space, is 15% a year over year traffic growth, and the traffic growth in the same year for the 20 legacy GTLDs. We're saying compare them to show the growth relative to the growth. We didn't even say it needed to be higher. Our metric is to simply compare them. So you'd compare the 2015 over 14 growth rate in traffic in the new versus traffic in the legacies in that same period of time. And this would give this particular commenter the data they needed, or that the data they thought they needed, compare whether these choices are choices that people are making with their fingers.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to argue against the U.S. government.
Well, they're a stakeholder, right? So what would be the right word, user traffic or website traffic?
Neither of this would be right.
What word?
It's not a word here. It's an assumption that is behind why the U.S. government is saying with it that I don't agree with. So therefore, I'm not going to comment.
All right, so team, for the rest of us, let's be consistent. Let's either use the word website traffic or user traffic, because we have both words in here.
I would use DNS traffic and leave it at that, because that's what the TLDs manage. They don't manage website traffic. They don't manage user traffic. They manage DNS resolution, right?
I'm Cheryl here. I'm okay with DNS.
I'm sorry. Cheryl, what?
I'm actually okay with DNS traffic. I have no problem with using that.
And Olivier, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, thank you. It's Olivier for the transcript.
Right.
Sorry for being late. I was on another call. Just I understand Jeff's point of view on this. The thing, though, is how is this to be sourced? You know, what data source does one have to find out the traffic, whether it's website traffic or DNS traffic? They're two entirely different things. Website traffic, I understand, might be measurable by organizations like Alexa and et cetera, that might be looking at the number of hits and having a deal with those websites to find out whether they were called upon via one domain name or another domain name. The DNS traffic, I guess, is probably more accurate, because when one looks at the website traffic, as Jeff said, you could use a new GTLD extension solely for email and not for web traffic at all. I mean, for example, .mail, would that have website traffic, or would this just be for mail? And so at that point, one has to look at the possibility of having some kind of DNS resolver data and whether this could be made available or how could this be made available, and whether it goes further than anything that we want. But I guess if the U.S. government thinks this should be put in there, I'd go for DNS traffic.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, it's going to take a lot more. This is Jeff. It's going to take a lot more than 3 years to create a massive change to the market. And you're going to need the larger organizations and, you know, the larger social media sites to be using the new TLDs, and that's going to take a while. More than
as long as their growth rate is good and their rate grows, it's easy to get a good growth rate when you start with a small percentage line. So that's why we decided to measure rate instead of asking staff to start to measure relative share between the two. Simply compare the growth rate.
Let's leave sourcing the data, I guess, out. So, I mean, that can be a conversation that implementation side of this may affect a number of the different metrics, but if we have some consensus that DNS is the best of all worst ideas, as they said in Argo, then let's just put DNS traffic down for now and see if we can turn this document around. I mean, presumably the USG will still be okay with that. Everyone agreed on that, that we'll switch to DNS?
Well, I think DNS currently is being tracked as to how many hits. I don't know to what extent, because it is distributed, you know, it would be pretty hard to get per domain name.
Well, I don't think we need it per domain name.
Does anyone know of current DNS hits being tracked?
I mean, there's large providers of DNS recursive services that you could use as a baseline, and if you keep going to those sources, they would presumably be able to tell a growth rate. But I don't know. I think we just put it in there and let's see what happens.
I think that's right for now.
I mean, you know, to some extent, this is going to fall on staff to see what things are measurable, and we'll have we'll get pushback if things appear not to be. But ideally, we're meeting the USG recommendation by measuring DNS traffic. So was that your last one, Jeff?
I know Steve's leaving. The only other thing I had, Steve, was in 3.4, which I think should only be open TLDs.
Okay, 3.4. Well, 3.4 is the back end. It's the registry service providers. It's the back end.
Exactly. It's pretty much irrelevant or close.
And Jeff, only measuring relative to 2011 when we had six registry service providers, whether you count all the closed or not, we're simply saying it ought to be twice as many. So if we just count the opens, can we get to 12? Because I don't know why we would want to exclude the closed. If including the closed gets us to 13 or 14, we'll have shown an increase in competition on the supply side.
Right. Your recommended three target is double. That doesn't mean that a group might not take this criteria and then say triple or quadruple or whatever it is. Or someone might not say, let's change that to 10 times. So the fact that we can think of two times being true now does not make me want to keep this criteria.
Well, whether we keep it or not, I'm pretty sure we don't want to limit the metric to measure only the open, since measuring them all always gets you more data.
Who's providing back end for dot times is not a relevant measurement of competition.
I disagree. The number of competing registry back-end providers, from a standard economic standpoint, the greater quantity of competitors, presumably you get greater quality, lower prices, and more competition.
But not for users or registrants. If we're looking at users and registrants, it's not relevant.
It's indirectly to the registrants, since the registries would presumably have lower costs if the registry service providers were more numerous and more competitive. Those lower costs should generate more successful TLDs.
I wholeheartedly disagree with that. The back-end providers do not determine anything about the front-end policies, the choice, anything like that. They have no, and in fact, there's no charge from registrants. There's no charge from the registry to registrants to use it.
I didn't mention choice. I mentioned the simple notion that the cost structure of a new GTLD registry operator will in part determine on what they have to spend to get somebody to run the back end. And the cost structure of the new GTLD operators will affect their commercial viability.
But, Steve, with five or six, does that make a difference whether you have 20? Right? There is no difference. And to me, you're basically making it sound, this is one, you know, obviously my company feels strongly about. You may disagree, but I don't feel like it's irrelevant.
Oh. Yeah, but you're arguing to get rid of the entire metric. And earlier you said maybe only count the opens. It doesn't make any sense to only count the open. I think you're arguing to get rid of the metric. Is that right?
No, just to get rid of the close. Just apply
it again.
Open.
You're breaking up. Say that one more time.
To just apply it to open, because that's where it affects price. It affects the end user. It affects a lot of things. In this case, for closed TLDs, it does not affect the registrant. It doesn't affect the end user. The fact is that there's 6 versus 12.
And you would argue that 3.4, as you see it on the screen, should say open TLDs only. If that's your argument, I would be willing to agree. I'm fine with that. I'm just surprised you'd want it, since it will result in a lower achievement of the metric.
Oh, no, I see the... No, I'm okay with it, with just being open.
You really are? Okay. And the reason, in case somebody asks, what would the reason be?
The reason is because there are many things I don't see that I don't believe that increasing the quantity of back-end providers to close TLDs affects the user or the registrant. Pricing, it doesn't affect any of the normal things that you look at competition for the benefits. Plus, I seem to think that if you have, let's say there's if people do separate the open from the closed, and there's only five or six back-end providers that service all of the closed ones, I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad thing from the user perspective at all. And you set your target as increasing it two times.
So you would want, parenthetically at the end, counting open GTLDs only.
Right.
This is for Steve's purposes. I'm perfectly fine with that.
I would be fine with that as well, and with your same logic, Steve.
Well, I mean, this is Jonathan, and I guess I'm fine with it. And I understand your argument, Jeff, that if it was some sort of a percentage figure, it would make more sense to worry about that, because as it is, the broader it is, the more likely we are to capture additional back-end service providers that come online, which would be help the overall metric. But I guess no one's against narrowing it.
Yeah, the reason I'm narrowing it is because I have a feeling after the fact it may get narrowed, and my fear is that they say, well, there's only five or six back-end providers. The same five or six are doing the back-end for all the brands, and therefore that weakens competition. But I'm not sure that that's
already hearing that, Jeff.
What's that?
That I've already heard griping like that.
I have too, and I don't like it. So.
Well, I pasted into the chat. And so I now have a full page of edits from 2.1, 2.2, got rid of 2.3 and 4. I have an edits to 2.5, 2.6, 2.7, 2.13, 2.16, and 3.4. Anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I appreciate you guys getting
Jeff
online.
No, thank you, Jeff. Thanks for
Do we have a new champion,
it.
Jeff?
What's that?
Do we have a new champion?
Yeah, I told you guys, you know, if we got on the call and you guys that I would certainly be in favor of it. I was serious about that in Toronto.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot for putting in the time. I know you're on vacation. And thanks everyone else for sticking with it too. And a lot of work's gone into this thing, so I'm glad that we're coming to some closure. Does anybody else have any points that you want to raise on this call?
Just Cheryl here.
Yes, go ahead.
Thanks. Just with Olivier arriving later, two things. I wonder if I and Jeff, thanks for this. It's made a big difference to all of our work, knowing that we may have a smoother passage through at least one of the essays of this. I just wondered, could you indulge me a moment and just go back, Steve, to the, I think it's 2.4, 2.3, 2.4 changes we made, because Olivier will need to also explain why we did that to Evan in the executive committee, particularly since I'm assuming we'll have the new text out of this in enough time for Olivier's agenda on the 27th to consider what we are now assuming is final draft text.
Got it. Cheryl, this is Steve. I have to jump off when my call comes in, but let me go as far as I can. Olivier, I will paste into the transcript what we've done with 2.1, 2, 3, and 4, and I will pledge to give an updated document in the next 24 hours. So you'll all have one on the working group. We'll have an updated document. I can make these edits quickly. Suffice to say that we took a look at what we had before on 2.1, 2, 3, and 4, and we used to lump together users and registrants. We used to lump together users and registrants, so we are going to change that and explicitly measure users and registrants separately. And we used to say that disclosure was distinct from understanding. That is, to disclose something was something you could measure, was it on a website? Understanding was something we would measure as to whether it was in plain language. With Jeff's help, we actually simplified this to just two measures instead of four. The first of the two I'm about to put into the chat. Olivier, I think you have access to the chat.
Yep.
The new 2.1 measures from the standpoint of registrants. Do they understand the benefits and restrictions of the TLD? So that they can make choices, informed choices, because this is under the choice metric. And, of course, they can only make a choice where it's open. So from a registrant's standpoint, you only would count the opens. And Evan had agreed with this distinction before. The target is that all open TLDs would have an understanding, and the source would be our famous biennial surveys of registrants. We'd ask them about their understanding. And then we would audit the general information page or pages of new TLD registries, which is sort of what we had in there before. Now, the second measure, and then I'll stop and take your questions. The second measure is 2.2, where you think about end users. And end users don't know open from closed. They just visit websites, stuff they see on the side of a truck, things that show up in search results, links on a page. So what is the Internet user's understanding of the eligibility restrictions so that a user can make an informed choice about relying on a domain name and a TLD? We don't believe there should be a target on this, but we want to measure it for all TLDs, both open and closed and even .brand. We want to measure it because Evan is very keen at determining the extent to which end users know about the ability to visit a website, even in a closed TLD, and who's the one controlling the domains that can get into .book if it's closed. We also added that the audit here should include the plain language information pages. Captures a little bit of the understandability from the language standpoint. But ultimately, we're relying on that survey, that biennial survey, because the biennial survey is really going to ask people, do you understand about the new TLDs? And then by doing it that way, we got rid of whether the registrars in 2.3 disclosed or linked. And we spent a good deal of time on the call as Newman walked us through. We all went to GoDaddy and some other registrar sites, and we learned that even today they don't disclose because they don't want you to go off their page. They expect you to do your research separately before you go to a registrar because the registrars don't want to lose the traffic. They don't want to lose the customer, as it were. I'll stop there, see if you have any questions.
Hey, guys, now that the break is, I have to drop off now. My family schedule.
Hey, thanks again, right? Jeff.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So it's Olivia here. I'm perfectly clear. Just one question. Are you then planning to remove 2.3?
That's right.
Yes.
The registrar
because the understandability will have been measured
TLD
in 2.1.
Restrictions and the terms and conditions for each respective TLD they offer, that would go, basically.
Yeah. Yes, because the understandability of I'm a registrant and I'm thinking about where to register. I'm considering moving to one of the new TLDs. So my understandability, my understanding of the benefits and restrictions is now being measured explicitly in 2.1. And I will have obtained that understanding either by the registry's website or by the registrar's website or by some marketing brochure I saw. I don't know where I'll have obtained it from, but we're going to try to measure your understanding through the biennial survey, and we're going to ask ICANN staff to audit the registry websites, assuming that each one has some sort of general information page that would describe the restrictions and benefits. How does that sound?
Wow, I'm concerned we'll just get very horrendous figures for that because it's going to be hard for a registrant to find that information, bearing in mind today it's hard for the registrant to find such information.
That would have been the case before or after these edits, though, because in both cases, auditing, right? We're in both cases, both before and after today's call, we're auditing the registry website.
And Olivia, this is Jonathan. I think what's also important to remember that we keep reminding everyone else is that we're not empowered to actually create requirements on registrars or registries. All we're doing is looking to see whether or not the program was successful after the fact. And so measuring whether or not people understood is different than us prescribing how we think that would most likely occur. That we're not empowered to do that.
Olivia Shaw here, that's the sort of thing that the review team itself would be, I think, probably well advised to consider.
No, that's exactly right, Cheryl. Yeah, I mean, if these numbers are low, they're going to say, well, whatever mechanisms were in place are insufficient, let's think of some new ones. But that's not what we've been tasked to do.
So 2.3 is being scrapped. 2.4 remains, or?
No, 2.4 goes away because we no longer are measuring disclosure separately from the word understandable, but going straight to the prize, which is understanding. Do people understand? Because before we were being, we were requiring two steps, some sort of objective discussion of was it disclosed, and then a separate assessment of whether it was understandable. And I do think it's far more workable if we measure understanding in one shot, however it was disclosed.
Okay, understood. It doesn't fill me with joy, but it's understood. I mean, I understand that. And of course, it's a restriction that this working group has. It cannot impose anything on the registrars or the registries, and how they will market their ways is really down to whatever review group is going to look at those metrics. And these two, obviously, 2.3 and 2.4, don't seem to be metrics.
Well, we didn't get rid of them, though. We have, if you look in the chat, 2.1 and 2 have captured what we used to have.
Correct.
3 and 4.
Yeah, but captured them in a way as to say measure that rather than impose that. So I'm fine
right.
with it.
Oh, excellent point. Of the 60 metrics we have, there were only 4 that started with the words so-and-so should disclose, or so-and-so should be understandable. And the only 4 we had that started with the word should, as if we were imposing a requirement, were these 4.
Okay.
So that made it more compelling to on us to standardize and make our metrics facially neutral. But everybody understands that we are being a bit normative about what we think should happen. I know we can't impose requirements if they're not in the guidebook or the contract, but we are hoping that the affirmation review team will look at the whole program, and if it turns out that the understanding of these closed TLDs is really low and people are relying on children's.book, not knowing that it's Amazon only, that we think that will reflect badly on the program and it will change the rules next time around.
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
Team, I will circulate all of that, and I'm afraid, Olivier, to be filled with joy, you'll have to wait for Christmas.
Good point.
I'm already filled with joy just hearing this is the end of this work, I guess. So that's all you have to say.
Good point.
It'd probably come back to us before Christmas anyway.
And that will be a kind of Christmas.
God, love you all.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, all. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, everybody. Absolutely.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye.
Bye-bye.